Te Kartikeyan, I'm very grateful for what you said. I have to admit to a certain lack of embarrassment because I couldn't understand most of it. I'm hard of hearing. This is the problem with becoming old. I give everybody the same advice, but nobody listens to me. I say, don't get old. As you've heard, I came to my guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, in 1948. And I was a very rational and somewhat intellectually arrogant young American. I don't say typical, because I wasn't typical, but in my arrogance, I think perhaps I was. And yet I always, even as a child, understood the fallacy of reason, that until you can understand something with your heart, you have not really understood it. And I used to enjoy using absolutely preposterous reasoning to prove things that I knew were false. But when I read Autobiography of a Yogi, it was an amazing experience for me. It didn't match my intellectual understanding of life. It was a completely different take on things. I couldn't really believe everything that he said. And yet my heart was so convinced that I took the next bus across the country, and the first words I addressed to him were, "I want to be your disciple." That was over 60 years ago, and I've never changed my mind since. This is the, in a sense, the subject of this book, which makes it clear that Western rationalism is not adequate for understanding life. We must understand life with our hearts, and this is something that India has abundantly. The understanding that it's, you know, the definition Patanjali gave of yoga, yogas chitta vritti nirodha. Vritti doesn't mean waves, as Vivekananda said. Really, it means whirlpools, eddies. And yoga is the calming of the feelings of the heart. Only then can you really understand. And I would like to say a little bit more, too, because I see Indu is here, that it was a great joy and privilege for me to live in his home and with his parents for some time in the early, late 60s, from 59 to 61. And he gave me a sort of insider's view of India, too. But the view that my guru gave me of India is based on the reality that Buddha, Swami Sri Shankaracharya gave, that everybody is seeking God, but they don't know it. People think that they're wanting money, sex, pleasure, fame, all the things that people are looking for. But he said that the real thing everybody's looking for, and they don't know it, is Satchidananda. We're all looking for happiness. We're all looking to be fulfilled in happiness. And somehow I had this understanding from childhood. And I knew that if I want to find what I'm looking for in life, it can only come through finding happiness. This is the goal of all life, whether you be a criminal or anything. Everybody is looking for happiness, and they don't know that that is where they'll find it. It's in themselves. So I remember one time, I was only 21 at the time, and my ambition at that time was to be a playwright. But when I discovered that I didn't know truth, I thought, why impose my ignorance on other people? And so I gave up that ambition. But I remember while I was living down there, studying sagecraft in Charleston, South Carolina, I took a long walk and tried to understand, because I had been looking for fulfillment and happiness in all the wrong ways. I thought to find it in science, in art, in music, in politics, in all sorts of ways that I seriously wanted truth, but I found that truth was not coming that way. And I remember I took this long walk into the night, and I said, what? There must be a God. But if there's a God, what must he be? And I realized that I'm conscious, and therefore I'm able to ask the question. But if I'm conscious, then he must be consciousness. And so I understood that the goal of life is to find God. The goal of life is to find Satchidananda. I didn't know those words then. I didn't know anything when I met my guru. I had never studied Indian philosophy, except for they gave us 20 minutes in the history of philosophy in college, and I think I slept through it. And then when I met Yogananda, I had never, 1 week before coming to him and saying, I want to be your disciple, I had never heard the word guru. I'd never heard the word yoga. I didn't know what karma meant or dharma or any of those words. It was completely foreign to me. But my heart told me this is what I'm looking for. I recommend that book, Autobiography of a Yogi, as the greatest book that I have ever read. I remember when I was 15 and I was first thinking seriously about what I was looking for in life, I decided that I would start communities. The World War, Second World War, was raging, and I felt that there's got to be a solution to the human situation where people are so eager even to kill each other, massacre each other. It's just not right. There's something in man that wants something more real and more deeply satisfying. And I decided that one way to do that would be to start communities. And I thought of going to South America, to the southern trip of tip of Argentina, and where it would be cheap to live. And I got all my friends interested, because I'm very enthusiastic by nature, and they were all enthusiastic until they found out that I was serious. Then, bit by bit, they all dropped away. But when I met Yogananda, I found that that was his ideal too. And I remember him saying one time at a garden party in Beverly Hills, and it was hardly the sort of thing that one expects an honored guest to talk about at a garden party, where you usually say thank you to your hostess and thank you to everybody for coming and all these things. He started in with the most powerful talk I have ever heard in my life. And he said that thousands of youths must go north, south, east, west, spreading this ideal everywhere of living together in communities where they can have high ideals, plain living, simple living, plain thinking. This, I said, yes, I vowed that moment. This was in 1949. I vowed that I would do what I could to make this ideal a reality. It was already my ideal, but he made it more so when I found out that it was his ideal too. It makes perfect sense. When people want, now it's becoming more obvious too, because now we see that the economy of the world is really starting to break. It hasn't hit you so badly in India. I don't know if it ever will hit you as badly as in America, because India is not a rich country, except the people here probably are pretty well off. But basically, it's not. And if you jump from here to the ground, you're not going to hurt yourself. But if you jump from the third story of a building, you'll kill yourself. And so it is that America is going to have to go through great suffering. And Europe will have to go through great suffering. And inevitably, India will have to go through some suffering. But it is not. Yogananda said, take the best advice I can give you. Get land in the country. Live with people who are harmonious with your own ideals. Live simply. And grow your own food. I know many people in America have been urging people to get gold. I say, you can't eat gold. You need to have places where you can grow your own food. And I know that during the hyperinflation in Germany in 1923, people had gold, they had beautiful paintings. Farmers wouldn't give them those things for food. It's obvious. You need food. You need places to live. You need places to grow your own food. Farming is an honorable profession. And I believe that this is the need of our time. I have started communities. I began in 1968, as you were told. One of the most difficult things in starting communities is that One of the most difficult things is that people think that systems are going to give you what you want in life. Systems will not give it to you. This is one of the great mistakes in Western philosophy, in communism, in so many things that we have seen in our day and age. People think that the system that you follow will guarantee. Systems don't guarantee anything, but people do. And I had had the job for some years when I was living in my guru's ashram of directing our center activities around the world. And I always tried to look for a system that would ensure the continuance of these centers after the death or the separation or whatever of the leader. I found it did not work. It always depends upon the leader, upon the consciousness of the person guiding. And therefore, my two principles are yata dharma stata jaya, and people are more important than systems, methods, anything. People are the most important thing. And this is what communism and most modern systems don't understand. The communists, Russian, Chinese, have murdered over 100 million of their own people, all in the name of continuing their ideal. That's not the way to do it. Ananda is the real communism, because here we find everybody owns things together, works together. There is love in this community, as I believe you were saying. when you can love people and understand that love must be based also on respect, then you can have a community of people who live together in that kind of harmony. And it is true. I'm here to tell you so. I had to delay my arrival in India because there was a court case against us in Italy, and I had to go there. I said when I was permitted to speak to the judge, I said, this is the first time in the 5 years of this case that I have been able to appear, because I've had to be in India and in America. But I said that I want to make this point clear. I do not agree with any of the charges you have made against us, but if any of them should be something you think is true, then I want you to understand that I am the one to blame. It is my responsibility. I am the founder. I am the leader of this community. Don't blame anyone but me. And I think that helped, because yesterday I had the hearing and I hadn't been able to stay for it. And the judge said, they're not merely innocent. The charges are completely false. So I have found that if you give everything to God, He will take care of you no matter what. And I've had many a test in my life, but always I've come out on top, you might say, because of this absolute belief that God will support you if you live for Him. And this is the truth that I believe also most people believe that they're being practical by thinking in terms of money first, progress first, power first, all those things. But I have seen in my life again and again that when I did what I felt was right, yatadharmastatajaya, when I have done what was right, I might have seemed as if I would lose, but I never did. And at the age of 82, it's possible to say that what you believe now, you've given the proof. You put it to the test. And I can't say how thrilled I am that this book, Hope for a Better World, is really, I think it's an important book. When I was 15, I didn't have much hope. The war was raging, and I thought of starting communities, but I thought of getting away from the world to start them. Now I've understood that you don't need to get away. Be in the world, but start, be in it with a different consciousness. I've seen so many times that people like that judge yesterday, he was completely won over by my saying, I'm no fault. Don't worry about what people say. Be interested in being truthful yourself, being absolutely truthful, and you will win out in the end. May take a few lifetimes even, let it happen. But it doesn't seem to take that long. Rather, everything. I have always adhered very strictly to Dharma in starting Ananda. I remember back in 1969, we'd been there just 1 year, and somebody came to me, a young man. He said, I've inherited some money, and I want your advice as to whether I should join Ananda or go to India. And I asked him how much money this was, and he said, $200,000. Well, at that time, 2 lakhs of dollars were a lot more money than they are now. And I said, I wasn't even tempted. I said, I think you should go to India. Why did I say that? Because he didn't offer that. He didn't offer joining Ananda as his desire. And I thought, if you don't want to join Ananda, you shouldn't come here. So he took my advice. I never heard from him again. That's fine. Because I have always believed that what if you do the right thing, I have several times had to place Ananda's very survival on this testing ground. 1976, we had a fire, and it destroyed most of our community, a forest fire. And our neighbors discovered that the fault of the fire was a county vehicle. It had a faulty spark arrester. And they were all eager to sue the county. They did. They collected. I wrote a letter to the supervisors. I said, I don't believe that we should sue. It's not your fault. It's just something that happened. And I said, we will not be suing you. We could have failed completely. I didn't allow that to be a consideration of mine. Because I knew that if I failed, then I deserved to fail. And this belief is what is behind the communities that we want to start in India. We don't want to take advantage of anybody. We don't want to have success as our priority. But I believe that this is something that India needs. We have also created inventions to bring cheap electricity to the villages. There are 800,000 villages in India, and most of them don't have electricity. If they could have refrigeration, if they could have light to study with, the children could go to school and learn, it could make a great difference in India. And I am very eager to do this, not for the billions that people are trying to bring alternate energy into the world for, but just to make it possible for people without means to gain what they need in order to survive. If they had refrigeration, they could eat, they could preserve their food, they wouldn't be sick all the time. There's so many advantages. We started something recently up near Morney Hills, and we hope with this to do more. But our interest in starting something in India is that India, well, I have to say one thing about India. I have seen Indians in many parts of the world, and I have been astounded to see that within one or two generations, they're at the top of society. Now, it doesn't mean that you're more intelligent. It means that your belief system allows that. You're not suppressed. You're not held down. The blacks in America are fine people. They have the same nervous system you and I have, but why are they not succeeding? Why is there so little of that there? Their belief system hasn't been strong enough. That's what's needed. Indians have that belief system, and I believe that India is going to, with America, India will be a very prominent country in the world. When I first came to India, even, I used to notice that so many people here in Delhi, so many men, look like United States stockbrokers. I don't know how it happens, but they all look they know what to do. And I think that Yogananda said that many Americans are being born in India, and many Indians are being born in America. I rank myself among them. But they have this understanding that spiritual and material efficiency needed, they're both needed, in order to bring about the fulfillment that all people want. I don't want to flatter you, but I'm speaking the sincere truth. I have never seen a people with so much potential for growth as in this country. And I hope very much to do my share in helping that to happen. But I know that when we went to Italy to start our work there, they had a difficult time in the beginning. Americans are very good at cooperating. It comes to them naturally. But Italy and India both had this thing of family first. I say, what kind of family is it that brother sues brother? And I know of a case that a mother suing her son. It just doesn't seem possible. But the need in Italy has finally begun to be perceived. And Indians more and more, more and more, have come to realize that their true family is Ananda. This is what we need, is a family of people, not together because they have blood relationship, but because they believe the same things, they have the same ideals. And yes, the first thing that's needed, and we've got to train people in it, leadership. Leadership, without leadership, you can't have this hope for a better world. But that leadership must be thinking of other people and serving other people and not getting it for yourself. This has been the great damage in leadership the world over and in India. We must understand that service is true leadership. And I have tried to bring that ideal into America, into India. I've written a book on the art of cooperative leadership. What is it?
Supportive leadership.
I don't even know my own book. And many big companies like Mitsubishi and AT&T and Kellogg and others have used this book for their own staff. And we are now giving this course. I remember I was in the hospital about 4 or 3 years ago. India hasn't been easy on this body, I'll tell you. I had double pneumonia. And a doctor came into my room. And you know a doctor when he comes into your room and you're hardly able to think, I wasn't able to breathe properly, you expect him to say, what can I do for you? His question was, sir, can you help me? I said, well, I can try. He said, I have a son in college in Canada. I have many responsibilities. How can I meet these responsibilities and still follow the principles of Dharma and yoga? And I said that I have found from my experience that following dharmic principles is the safest and surest way to success. Well, I'm afraid that lying there almost unconscious was not the best advertisement for success. And he just looked at me very skeptically. And the next day, when I was having lunch, I said to my cook, she brought the lunch over, and I said, I would like to write a course on material success through yoga principles. Well, I did. It took me a year and a half. But I believe this course is a very important course for Indians, because I've seen too many Indians take the shortcut and then they wonder why they aren't succeeding. When you are strictly dharmic, I have shown by my life and by this course, and Dharmaraj and others, there's Dharmaraj there, are giving this course to big businesses around the country, and it is having a great success. Am I saying it for you, or would you like to say it? I am thrilled to be able to be of service to India, because I am more Indian than American. I feel that my samskars are Indian, my body is American, but I hope very much in the little bit of time that I have left to me, and I hope it's little and not much, I am very eager to help India to come up in the world. I know that Abdul Kalam, the president then, said to me, "Do you like the way India's been going?" Because it was in 1958 that I first came here, and I lived here for 4 years. And I said, "It is certainly a little bit less spiritual now than it was." But I said that this is necessary for India. India needs to become, to claim its rightful position as one of the great countries in the world. But I said that you will not be able to get rid of spirituality in this country. It is something that is ingrained in the soil. I know when I land at the Delhi airport on a plane, I feel that spirituality immediately. There is something that you won't be able to get away from even if you try, because this spirituality is thousands of years of great rishis living in this country and bestowing their blessings on this land. The hope for a better world is based not on principles, systems, it's based on human nature. I'd like to read to you a little section of it. Adam Smith was the one who, well, he wrote about economy of the world. And he scandalized the people of his day, because his basic principle was that everybody's out for himself. And they thought, this is wrong. Well, if it's a fact, why call it wrong? Better use it in the right way, and it is a fact. Adam Smith's general thesis was that every human being is motivated primarily by self-interest. A nation's prosperity, he said, will soar if it gives people the freedom to improve their own lot. It is not, he wrote, from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we expect our dinner, but from their regard for their own interests. We address ourselves not to their humanity, but to their self-love, and never talk to them of our own necessities, but of their advantages. Passages like this caused an outcry among the soi-disant champions of morality, though in fact Smith had simply stated an obvious truth. He was comparing self-interest to false morality, which bases generosity on benevolence entirely on self-denial. Smith was right, of course. Morality, as people usually define it, is hypocrisy. No one will really help another if he expects only, in doing so, to become miserable. Self-sacrifice for others should be for the sake of a greater good. If it benefits oneself also, if only in terms of inner satisfaction, it is no sacrifice. Smith erred only, as many self-styled moralists have done, by not humanizing his subject enough. He didn't focus with sufficient clarity on the people's actual needs as individuals. He gave us examples, the butcher, the brewer, the baker, to support his argument. What he didn't do was give us human beings. He gave us two-dimensional tradesmen. It might have helped had he given those tradesmen names, personalities, families. Let us make up for this sin of omission. We'll name the baker William, surname Baker. And we'll assume the presence of another one in town, whom we'll name Joe, surname Crumpet. Let us be even more specific. William concentrates only on the advantages accruing to himself while he sells bread, whereas Joe, though fully aware that he is earning a living, has other values besides. He greets you with a smile, treats you as a friend, asks after your family, hopes that you enjoy his baked goods, perhaps solicits your advice. Oops, I think I'd better sit down. Perhaps solicits your advice on how to improve them. Let us now assume, it is probably the case anyway, that William wears a perennially grim expression, that he has poor digestion and is always bitter about something. Joe, on the other hand, is warm-hearted, healthy, and happy. Isn't it likely that quite apart from economic considerations, their products bear more or less the same prices? You'll shop at Joe's and shun William as a bad omen? Adam Smith, in discussing economies, discounted more human considerations such as benevolence because he considered these to lie outside the circle of. Okay. The circle he'd drawn. He wanted to convince his readers that he, too, was a scientist. Whence, however, that word, benevolence? Whence other words like it, such as kindness, sympathy, compassion, and goodwill? These must have some meaning. If they haven't any for the economist, perhaps the fault lies in the way he approaches his science. Let us imagine a final possibility. What if William, not Joe, mind you, for whom we have a natural liking, but William, for whom we have little, is stricken by tragedy? His home may have burned down, or his only child just died. Wouldn't you rush to bring him and his family comfort and assistance, offering them money, food, clothing, sympathy? Financial considerations wouldn't enter the picture. Even your personal feelings for him, which have been at least at best tepid, would pale to insignificance before his great loss. Adam Smith, being an economist, ignored such considerations as irrelevant. Economic constructs, however, if kept apart from human realities, are no better than wax images. They may be artful, but they lack life. Being only wax, moreover, they melt under the heat of scrutiny and become shapeless. If there is any subject that affects our lives daily, it is just this one, economics, which Smith separated so carefully from the life we actually live. We ought to give highest economic considerations to human values, not as statistics merely, but for their meaning to us as individuals. We ought to see people, too, in terms of the awareness they project. This is their primary reality for us. I remember I was in Taormina in Sicily a few years ago, and I went into a shop and asked the lady there. It was cold and I needed a hat. So I asked her which style of hat do her customers like? Oh, I don't care. They just pay me my money and leave. I don't care about their interests. I said, look, you work here presumably about 8 hours a day. You have this opportunity to make friends, and instead all you think about is the money they're giving you. Your whole life is barren that way, and besides that, you won't get as many customers. And I gave her a good strong talking to. And the next year, I happened to pass her shop. I certainly wasn't going to go in there, but she was in the street, and she came up and embraced me. She said, I changed her life. We have to understand that what we do is ultimately for our satisfaction, but giving satisfaction to others is a far greater satisfaction than taking from them. That is why Jesus Christ said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. When we share with others, when we think of their happiness, then We ourselves find the fulfillment we want. This is the basis of morality. Morality is doing that which will expand your ego. The spiritual path can be defined in one simple concept: getting rid of the ego. There's so much joy when there's no thought of self. You find that when you can think of other people and don't think of what you're getting from them, they love you, you love them, everything works out. I can tell you, it's it's the most common sense teaching in the world. And this teaching I have found here in India. So I would like all of you to think of that seriously. But I would like you also to think seriously of joining communities as I have founded and I'm hoping to found here in India. When people can share with one another, share their ideals, when they don't think about what they want, but how can they give and how can they be truthful and right? It works, I tell you. And I hope that this course that I've written for Indians, and I hope that this ambition that I have to start communities here based on spiritual values, I believe that this ideal will take hold here. It may take a little while, but just as in Italy, people have discovered that we're their true family, it's also true here in India. Your true family is not necessarily your sons, your brothers, your sisters, your parents. They may be, but often they're not, let's face it. Brother suing brother. So many things. But when you have a family of people who live together because they believe in the same ideals, this is what gives hope for a better world. I believe that this world that we're moving into right now will pass beyond the Great Depression that I see coming, and warfare, which will be international. I do believe that we're going through a hard time coming up quite soon. But I also believe that if we live with right consciousness and live to help others, God will be with us and God will protect us. And I think that India can offer an example to the world if they will get away from being so Western, if they can just be more Indian, but in the way that I have come to understand India. Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma is not Hinduism. Sanatan Dharma is the only religion in the entire universe, because it is that truth which says we've all come from God, we are a part of God, and our destiny is to merge back into Him. This is Sanatan Dharma, not Hinduism, not Kali or Durga or anything, but that truth that we are a part of God, and our duty in life, our destiny in life, is finally to merge in Him. The Bhagavad Gita says that it implies that we have lived through many days of Brahma. That's no pleasant thought. One day of Brahma lasts billions of years. We have lived through many of those. We can go on indefinitely, but sooner or later we've got to understand that what we are looking for, all of us, is Satchidananda. All of us want happiness, and we will only find it in God, and we will only find it when we offer our lives to Him and help other people to find Him. I would like to ask all of you to think seriously about what I've said here, to think seriously about God being your true purpose in life, even if you don't see it that way now, because sooner or later, nothing works. Satan has one promise he always keeps. He disappoints you. Nothing that you can do ever works except finding God. You know, it's so interesting to look at the people in the world, and so many people have gotten so many ambitions, all the ambitions that you see in the world around you, for money, for power, for pleasure, for everything. And yet, the only thing that works is finding God. And you know, people at the end of their journey, none of them say, "I've found what I wanted," except the saints. And they all say that it would be worth everything, even to help other people get this state, because it's the only purpose of life. There is absolute unanimity on this point. The saints in this world, and I don't mean only Hindu saints, those who love God, they, no matter where they are, they always are eager to help other people, even if it means sacrificing their own lives. I don't see how anybody can refute that argument. If you want happiness, seek God. It will give you what you want. He will give you what you want. And believe me, it works. God bless you.